comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet. Thank you for being here. For those of you watching on our TV channel, I apologize for the starts and stops there at the beginning. The software had the hiccups, but I think we're okay now. It's talk radio like nowhere else on earth. It's the show where you matter. We're here because you have a right to know. Well, this is the show everybody's been waiting for all weekend. This is the show dealing with the NSA's publication of UFO documents. They released these documents on their website on April the 21st. On April 22nd, I began working toward this show tonight. Meanwhile, out there on the internet, links were flying, blogs were being lit up all over the internet. People who verifiably know absolutely nothing about the NSA, as well as people who obviously know something about the NSA, have been blessing us all with their thoughts and opinions, particularly about one specific document, the one on which we will focus tonight. And I think that's good. I think it's good for people to be out there expressing their opinions. Some of those opinions are obviously informed, and some of those opinions are obviously not informed. But it's good for people to be expressing their opinions. And tonight, we're going to be asking someone with NSA experience this question. Did disclosure just happen? If you're not receiving the K-Files, that's our free weekly newsletter, you need to be receiving it. And you need to be receiving it because it contains all kinds of information. It contains the inside scoop on what's going on here at the show. It contains articles that are within our genre and of interest, links to videos within our genre of interest. Always a free download. And like I say, it's free. So there's really no reason, nor is there an excuse, to be in the dark. You don't have to be. All you have to do is subscribe. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. So just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click where it says K-Files, subscribe. You're going to get a confirmation email. There's a link in it that you have to use to activate your subscription. And that's it. A number of you have subscribed and never activated your subscription, and you're not getting it, are you? Okay? So you need to subscribe and then activate your subscription. Also, we have a community called the Members Area, and in that community of people, there are really some wonderful and really sharp people. And we have a good time in there in the forums. We have chat room. That's where the archives are for the show. They're called K-Pods. We have a video galaxy of videos for you to watch. All kinds of stuff. You get your own blog, your own profile page, friends page, all kinds of stuff. And it's only 23 cents a day. Imagine that. $6.95 a month. That's it. You need to join. We want to see you in that community. You can do it tonight. We'll be back right after this. Thank you. Peter Gersten is an attorney in Arizona who filed a Freedom of Information request with the NSA on behalf of Citizens Against UFO Secrecy years ago. The NSA said they had no documents pertaining to UFOs and extraterrestrials. Congressman Schiff got involved with that was also stonewalled by the NSA. So he instigated a General Accounting Office Inspector General investigation of the NSA. The Gersten Group filed a lawsuit against the NSA during that time as well, and in the end, the IG report identified hundreds of documents at NSA related to UFOs and extraterrestrials. Some of those documents had already been declassified and could have been released to the public, but the NSA was refusing to release them. The judgment in the case required the NSA to publish all these documents. On April the 21st, they did so. They complied with and then published the documents on their website. Tonight, we're going to focus on one particular document. We will mention others, but our focus is on one particular document. And when I say we, I mean you, me, and our guest. Joining us tonight is Jeff Bird, formerly associated with the NSA. I'll let him explain how he was associated. And currently is a broadcast executive. Jeff, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Kevin. Good to be here.
Jeff, what's your past association with the NSA?
I used to be involved with the Information Assurance Technical Framework Forum, which in a nutshell, without the $5 words, we were a private industry group that reviewed documents and protocol and security things for how to handle secret, classified, other types of documents like that, as well as setting policy for information security, computer systems, and everything from thing that would be in a file cabinet to a big database somewhere.
Okay, did you have to have any kind of a clearance to do that?
That particular thing, not exactly, but I held several other security clearances and went through the Defense Security Service Academy training and was trained on how to identify these documents and read them, classify them, how to take care of them, how to keep them out of other people's hands, and all manner of how documents are kept secret from everybody.
Okay, so you had training in all of the things associated with the classifying of documents and keeping them safe, and you did have, I believe, at one point, and maybe still have, I don't know, top secret clearance. Is that right?
Yeah, I've held many different clearances, but mostly having to do with space stuff. So.
Okay. All right. Now, the document that we're going to focus on tonight, folks, is the one that's entitled Key to Extraterrestrial Messages. It is the report of a presentation that was given by Dr. Howard Campaign to the NSA. So before we jump into that, Jeff, let's begin with, what do we know about Dr. Campaign? Who is he?
He's probably one of the one of the world's leading experts on cryptography. He's one of these people I would call a heavy hitter. He was a Navy captain. He's done numerous amounts of work for the NSA, CIA, just about any alphabet company you can imagine. PhD, mathematician, engineer, you name it. This guy, when the government needed something decrypted, they called on this guy.
Okay, now, I want to clarify something for the audience, because I'm seeing this out there on the internet now. There are people claiming that he was, at one point, the director of the NSA. Now, if that's so, it's extremely secret. I went to the NSA website and searched for their list of past directors, and it's there. There's a list of all of their past directors, and he's not on it. So that's floating around out there that he was the director of the NSA at one point, and that's not accurate. At least according to the NSA, that's not accurate. Now, this document, Jeff, caught my attention because of the wording of this document, and I want to put another disclaimer in here for folks. Folks, what we're going to do is we're going to share with you what we can find and what we see in this document and related documents. I'm not saying absolutely that this constitutes disclosure. I will absolutely say I think so. But I could be wrong about that. There could be some other information that comes forward at some point that would change the way I look at this, and I'm open to that if that happens. But I think it does constitute disclosure, and I think in a big way. But we're going to share with you the bits and pieces of why, okay? We're going to the details of why. So if you would, Jeff, describe the article. Well, I'll give a summary of the article, and then we'll take it from there. This is an article that appeared in the NSA Journal. This is sort of an in-house publication. It doesn't go out there on the newsstand, all right? And it appeared several years ago, we assume. The problem is, in the document that got released, in this document, it doesn't have the date. It has the volume number, and it has volume and number. But we don't know the publication date of that. I didn't find that. But it was several years ago. And in this document, this heavy hitter, Dr. Howard Campaign, which, by the way, you might find it interesting, I was unable to find any photographs of Dr. Campaign on the internet. So maybe that was just precautions. I don't know. But he is giving a presentation in a series of presentations called Extraterrestrial Intelligence. There's a series of presentations being given at the NSA by NSA people. And this series is called Extraterrestrial Intelligence. Since he's giving this presentation to people who are already on the inside, have clearance to know things, and has been asked to do so, there are some very interesting statements of fact that he makes. There are some interesting little twists that people have pulled out of this article and used it to say, oh, well, this isn't the real thing. And I'll deal with those one by one here in just a moment, a little bit later in the show. But this article starts out with some statements of fact. In other words, he just says, this is it. This is how it is. Now, let me ask you, Jeff, you dealt with documents, and as you say, most of what you've had clearances over had to do with space stuff. So you've looked at this kind of stuff before, not necessarily this document, but you've looked at this sort of material, this kind of stuff published by the NSA. Do they normally use what we would call disclaimative language, like saying, well, this is hypothetical, it's theoretical, or it could be, or it's thought to be? Do they normally use that kind of language whenever they're talking about a hypothetical situation?
Yeah, well, most of these documents, and this specifically comes out of a technical journal, so I wouldn't expect it to be quite as quite as organized as, you know, like a memo to somebody or some other document that was put on file. But the one thing that's interesting about this is that little paragraph up at the top of here would normally contain some sort of a, you know, in the following article is presented this hypothetical situation, or we're looking at this, and, you know, this is pretty matter of fact. And, I mean, it just talks about the series of the 29 messages that appeared in here. If you notice, also in that top paragraph, it mentions a previous article that we don't have a copy of this.
Mm-hmm.
It talks about series 30 and 31 that were not included in the previous article.
Yeah, so we don't have a copy of that previous article.
Well, and that may shed more light onto what this was all about, and maybe some disclaimers. However, my question is, why, after all of these court cases and the Freedom of Information Act inquiries and stuff, did they release this but not the previous article?
Interesting question. I want to point out some things here, that folks. I've already published these links in the forums in our members area. You can go there and hit the link and download the whole article for yourself if you want to. You can see it there. But what I've done is I've just taken the very first paragraph. It's in italics. The very first paragraph of this article is very interesting because of a couple of things. First of all, it just gives us statements of fact, not hypotheticals. Here's how it reads. Dr. Campaign presented a series of 29 messages from outer space in extraterrestrial intelligence. Okay, that's that series of presentations that I told you about. And then it goes on to say that it's published in the technical journal, NSA Technical Journal, and it gives the page numbers. But now listen to this. The following article develops a key to these messages. Now, the reason I point this out is two reasons. One of the things that has come up is people are saying, because he mentions In this article, it mentions in one or two places, he says something about this exercise. This exercise is developing the key to decode these messages. That's the exercise. The messages themselves are never presented as being the exercise. The messages are presented here by the NSA's own publication. It says, Dr. Campaign presented a series of 29 messages from outer space in extraterrestrial intelligence. And then it goes on to say, this article includes two new messages, numbers 30 and 31, not included in the previous article. So the messages are not spoken of as being the exercise. The exercise is to decode these messages. And he gives a presentation to show how you would go about, how do you go about decoding these messages. And we'll get into some other stuff about that in just a little bit. But what happens, people see the word exercise, Jeff, and they think, oh, okay, well, this whole thing, the messages and everything, was all made up. It was an exercise. It very clearly delineates between the messages and the exercise. At least I think so, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, they specifically mention the exercise being the process of developing this key, and obviously as they're developing it, it opens up more and more to being able to develop that key even further.
Mm-hmm.
But my assumption, and it's just basically without having any other information prefaced or disclaimers or anything, my assumption would be that the exercise here, which is the unknown portion of this, is how do we develop a key or a way to decrypt this, and the exercise is going through the motions of doing the math, doing the cryptographic decoding methods for developing that particular that key, if you will, to this whole thing. There's very, very little that delineates the exercise from the stuff, other than the fact that they call that specific thing the exercise, developing the key, not the messages. That's not part of the exercise.
Well, that's actually the way I read it, because that's the way it's written. I mean, it is written that way. It comes right out and says, Dr. Campaign presented a series of 29 messages from outer space in extraterrestrial intelligence. Okay, now, there is another paragraph, and this paragraph is also important. Here it is, folks. Are you ready for this? Recently, a series of radio messages was heard coming from outer space. The transmission was not continuous, but was cut by pauses into pieces. Let me enlarge my screen so I can see this, which could be taken as units, for they were repeated over and over again. The pauses show here as punctuation. The various combinations have been represented by letters of the alphabet so that the messages can be written down. Each message, except the first, is given here only once. The serial number of the message has been supplied for each reference. At the end of this article, in the appendix, you have listed the... You have all the messages listed. Now, when you get to 30 and 31, he says, look, you know, we just didn't get into that because it would make this exercise longer. This exercise is to develop the key to decode those messages. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Jeff Bird, and we're talking about this document, all the documents in general, but specifically the document released by the NSA entitled The Key to Extraterrestrial Messages. Jeff, let me ask you, when I first called you and told you about this and asked you to go take a look at it, and you read this for the first time, how did it hit you? How did it strike you?
Kind of like it's about time, really. But when I started looking it over, I mean, there's some pretty heavy-duty people involved with this, as well as some pretty matter-of-fact mathematics that they've gleaned from all of this. Oh, and by the way, I got a date for you for this. This particular NSA Technical Journal, volume XIV, number one.
Yeah.
It was volume 14, number one, was released in the winter of 1969.
All righty then.
This particular article appeared in 1969.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that the various debunkers have been saying. You know, they've been saying, well, this is just like a book that came out. And they named the book, and you said that book was in the 1970s, right?
One of the things, I can't remember the actual title of it, but it was a science fiction book that was outlining things like this and extraterrestrial signals and how they did this, and a lot of the things that I've looked at on internet forums and things where people were kind of naysayers about all this or trying to prove that this wasn't real or whatever. They were correlating it, this particular science fiction book, that it was something that was in the late 70s, and now we know that this was released in winter of 1969. And actually, I just went back and got, I was able to get somebody that got me the date on one of these other articles that's even further back than this. So it's late before any of this.
Well, we'll get to that, but it's an important point. There are people, folks, you've seen it all over the forums. There are people out there trying to say, okay, this was all just theoretical. This was an exercise. There's nothing to this. And as a matter of fact, it was even in a book. It was something that was in a book. See, here's the deal. They can't call into question the authenticity of the document because it's published by the NSA and has now, and it's a mathematician cryptographer who had worked for 30 years with the NSA. All right. Now they can't attack that. Plus, it's the NSA that's published this thing on their website. So you can't attack the authenticity of the document. There it is. They published it in their journal, and now they've published it on their website. So one of the ways to attack it is to say, okay, it was all just theoretical and everything, because, I mean, you know, there's this science fiction book that came out, and it had almost exactly the same stuff in it. Yeah, but it came out years and years after this. But here's what that kind of suggests to me, Jeff. You know, a lot of times people say, the government leaks stuff to the science fiction authors and to movie makers and so forth. And we see things as science fiction that their birthplace was reality. And it's just their way to kind of get us used to the information. Well, here's a case where it very well could have been that, because this happened before the book. And then the book, apparently, according to people on the forums, is virtually identical to this. What do you think about that? About the possibility that this was possibly leaked, and the author of the book may have gotten a peek at it.
And I also believe here that the previous article that they're mentioning here appeared in volume 11, number 2, in winter of 1966. I happen to have a copy of that, as a matter of fact, too. And there is no hypothetical exercise going on here.
Okay. So what you're telling us is, this is straight up stuff. They received messages from outer space. These are extraterrestrial messages. And the only exercise involved is the exercise of developing the key for decoding the message. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, I would think, with the fact that the what it talks about, this includes the two new messages at 30 and 31 that were not included in the previous article.
Yeah.
And the previous article, their disclaimer starts out that we are not alone in the universe.
Yeah.
That's their disclaimer to tell us that this is an exercise.
Okay. Read the first two or three sentences of that, because I have read that, and I think the people need to hear it.
Yeah, basically it says we are not alone in the universe. A few years ago, this notion seemed far-fetched. Today, the existence of extraterrestrial intelligence is taken for granted by most scientists.
Okay, and this also was published in the NSA Journal. And again, it, at that point, was not released to the public. It was in the NSA Journal. Is that correct?
Right. It was not released to the general public, but the original, actually, interestingly enough, the original document was marked originally unclassified and has not been changed at all.
Quite interesting.
This one does not bear the approved for release under Freedom of Information Act stamp anywhere on it. It has not been remarked. It hasn't been reclassified. So somewhere, somehow, this was floating around, but in unclassified form, but was not available to people. I mean, we do have ways, very, very interesting ways of unclassifying information, but yet not having it available to anybody. It's like hiding things in plain sight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but the article that we're focused on tonight, the key to decoding extraterrestrial messages, or the key to extraterrestrial messages, this article had to be declassified, didn't it?
Yeah, it had to be. It was a, this was a direct result, and I don't know if off the top of my head, but I see the case number, and it did trace back to the gentleman in there, the attorney in Arizona. That particular case, they had to go to court to get a federal court to order the release of this. And at some point in time, well, they, I believe in our conversations, you've seen where they denied the existence of any of this stuff. So,
well. Here's what I understand about it. Now, look, some of the debunkers, immediately when I posted on my Facebook that this was coming, that this show was coming, I started getting little notices, and not really debunkers, but little kind of cautionary notices that this information's been out there for a while. No, folks, yeah, it's been out there in the possession of the NSA. It was cleared for release to you on October the 21st, 2004. It was actually released to you April the 21st, 2011. So no, this has not been out there and available. There were rumors about it. There were people saying, well, you know, there's a couple of guys there at the NSA doing some pretty interesting stuff with extraterrestrials. Yeah, but these documents were not released to you until April the 21st, 2011. Approved for release, cleared for release, October 21st, 2004. Years went by where you were cleared. This document was cleared for you to read it. Years went by with the NSA stonewalling and not allowing you to read it. Now, on their site, they have a list of search terms that people have asked them to search for in Freedom of Information request, FOIA request. And in that list, you'll see extraterrestrial signals. And it's a list of things that they've looked for, and they said, we didn't find any documents about it. What is this? That's what this is. This is all about messages from extraterrestrials. Now, Jeff, you found some very interesting information. One of the projects that keeps coming up in all of these NSA documents is Project OSMA. It was an early version of what became SETI. It was run by Cornell University. But you found some interesting statements about messages.
Yeah, I was just trying to look through my notes here. The actually, some of this stuff goes way back to the late 50s even.
Well, what I'm referring to specifically is where the extraterrestrials were surprised and pleased that we had decoded a particular concept. You go ahead and see if you can find that. We'll come back to that after this. We have a break coming up here in about 3 minutes, two minutes, and we'll come back to that. You can locate that. But, you know, one of the important things that I think people need to get from this, and this is my opinion, but one of the important points is that nothing that the debunkers have brought up holds water here. The book, the sci-fi book may be almost exactly like this, but it was published after this. This was done in 1969. The idea of, well, that's been out there for a long time. This is nothing new. So what? Even if that were true, so what? Air is nothing new, but it's kind of important, isn't it? You see? But the fact is, this is new. This has not been available to you till April the 21st, 2011. So anybody that tells you that, scratch them off the list. And then, you know, there's also this thing of... sort of, this is all just, this article by Campaign, this is all just it's a theoretical exercise. No, it's not. And they say, well, it's obviously theoretical. No, it's not obviously theoretical. It's obviously not theoretical. Based on the actual words, the actual language published by the NSA.
Well, this is what you were talking about before. I found, and this could kind of wrap up in a nutshell how theoretical this is.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to read. I'm just going to.
No, I tell you what. Let's leave people on the edge of their seat, and when we come back from this break, we'll do that because we have a break taking over. We'll be back, folks, right after this. When the curtain came down for break, Jeff was about to read from another document, and he said this will pretty much wrap up about how theoretical is this. So, Jeff, go ahead.
Well, this is actually just one of them, but this is from the previous article that they mentioned, the one back from 1966, I believe, that... It says here the transmission 21. These were all broken down into single transmissions, and they coded them individually, almost like line by line. But it says that transmission 21 adds nothing new to the 31 symbols recovered thus far, but it does quote one of the most beautiful concepts in pure mathematics. They are telling us that if they can teach us such a complex notion at this early stage, we would be staggered by what they will teach us by the 200th or even the 2000th transmission.
There you go. That's how theoretical it is. And this is from an article 3 years earlier.
In the same journal.
So what's your opinion of this? You know, I have said I think this constitutes disclosure. I do. I think it does constitute disclosure. I think that's what this is. But I could be wrong about that. There could be facts in play that I'm not aware of. I could be wrong about it. I'm not wrong about anything that I've said so far tonight. But I could be wrong about my conclusion that I've drawn from it. So what do you think? Is this, does this constitute disclosure?
Well, I kind of sort of think it does. I mean, I can't say for sure that it is. On the other hand, the one thing that kind of leads me to question the whole thing is, if this was just an exercise and it was all theoretical, why was it so hidden, and why did it take almost 30 years of lawsuits to bring this out?
Well, also, if it was just an exercise, why did it spread over many years? We've got the first article 3 years before this second article that the second article references. And you have other articles that go back even further. One of the interesting things that you and I came across was that they released is this article about Sputnik.
Mm-hmm.
Now, folks, Sputnik was the very first thing in space. The first thing in orbit around the Earth. Sputnik absolutely terrified the United States of America, and all it did was float around the Earth and give off beeps. It was pretty much a test program to see, can we put it in orbit, and can we make it transmit, and can we pick up the transmission? And it was done by the Soviet Union. And so it just orbited the Earth and beeped. Well, it was being monitored by, of course, the U.S. military and intelligence services. And what they discovered, first of all, it's on a frequency that you don't go to Radio Shack and buy a transmitter that can hit that frequency. Okay, so they're monitoring it, and at the edge of the frequencies, at the edge of the frequency, there are fuzzy distortions in an intelligent pattern, as if there is a signal somewhere, the edge of which is overlapping the Sputnik signal. And this article takes it very seriously, and it says the notion that this is some kind of normal or natural distortion has to be kept in abeyance. That means we can't accept that, because this is an unidentified disturbance that doesn't match anything we know that could do it. Now, that's not a direct quote. The abeyance part was a direct quote. But I summarized for you what they said. So here you've got the Sputnik signal. That's man-made. But at the edge of that signal, there were disturbances in patterns that appeared to be intelligent. So one of the things that we can say for sure is that the NSA has taken and is taking all of this stuff very seriously. So when you hear someone say, oh, there's nothing to that, those very people that say that are paying millions and millions of dollars to the NSA, who says, yeah, there is something to that, and we're taking it seriously. Jeff, go ahead.
Matter of fact, they took that one so seriously that they were convinced back in 1924 that these signals must be some communications trying to be established from Mars.
Well, yeah, but that's a separate. That was not Sputnik. That's in the same article.
Yeah.
But in 1924, for 3 days, the Earth was receiving signals from somewhere. And the interesting thing is, no matter where you were on Earth, if you were picking up those signals, you were picking them up with the same intensity as someone on the other side of the Earth. So it was not a local signal. they determined it had to be coming from outer space. If it was a local signal, it would only go so far, and then the signal dies out, just like your radio station. But these were being picked up all over Earth for 3 days in a language that nobody understood. It was not a voice transmission. If you can imagine Morse code, only it was not in our language.
Yeah, it was a series of dots and dashes, but it didn't match our own Morse code, but it was very similar.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they took that very seriously. And then when Sputnik came along, they had not forgotten. And when they noticed that same sort of dot-dash disturbance out at the edge, just kind of the fuzzy edge of the Sputnik signal, that got their attention again. So they've been, and the NSA has been in business since the 1950s, and they've been taking this stuff very seriously ever since. They take UFOs seriously. They take extraterrestrials seriously. I'm going to prove that to you. Even those of you who are not watching our channel can go to my website and scroll down and see a picture about tonight's show. And if you do that, you will see what I'm going to talk about. What I've done is I've taken part of one of the documents released by the NSA. There's a whole bunch of them. There's hundreds of documents there. But I've taken just one of them, and in this one, we see it was classified as top secret Umbra, which means it's top secret, and then there's a code word, and need to know kind of stuff. But if you read this report, it's two UFOs that were tracked on radar. It tells how high they were, you know, what the altitude was. It tells their speed. It tells how far they were tracked, and then they faded from radar. It tells what direction they were traveling. And then right at the end, on the bottom line, the bottom full line of type, the next to the last group of letters. Take a look at that, and I'll tell you what that's about when we come back. We'll be back after this. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Jeff Bird, formerly associated with NSA as a consultant, has held several security clearances, and as he said, most of that had to do with space stuff. Okay, so I was talking about this picture that's on my website, the graphic about tonight's show. And this is taken from one of the many, many reports, teletypes, sent from NSA field offices to the NSA. And this is reporting an unidentified flying object, two of them. If you look at the bottom full line of text, next to the last grouping, you see they're grouped with commas between them, next to the last group, you see the letters WNINTEL, Wintel. How serious are these? You know, we get told that, well, serious scientists don't take this UFO stuff seriously. Really? Well, how serious is this, Jeff? Wintel.
Usually to know that there's a pretty immediate threat that needs to be dealt with.
Okay, so it means what? Warning notice?
Yeah, that's exactly what the acronym stands for. The WN Intel is a warning notice.
Okay, so it's a warning notice with intelligence sources backing the notice. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Okay. So how serious does the NSA take it? How serious do they think it is? Well, it's right there in their own documents. You see a whole, you'll find a bunch of these documents where they say, they report that they tracked an unidentified flying object thought to be a balloon. It's pretty curious. I read one, 72 objects were tracked on radar. 72 thought to be balloons. However, they were at some ungodly altitude, like 59,000 feet. So this is not a bunch of kids' birthday party balloons that got loose. If it's balloons, these are serious balloons to get up to that altitude. And 72 of them. But you see a whole bunch of them where it says thought to be balloons or probably balloons. However, and they're ridiculous, a lot of them. Some of them you read and you think, yeah, it probably was. But a lot of them are really ridiculous. However, there are a bunch of these, if you go through and read all these documents, a bunch of them have this WINTEL, W-N-I-N-T-E-L, WINTEL. And those are the ones that the intelligence community took seriously and said, this is credible, possible threat, this is a warning notice. And there's a bunch of those.
Yeah, like a rogue balloon going at several hundred miles an hour.
Yeah, a rogue balloon traveling several hundred miles an hour is not a balloon. The importance of that, Jeff, as I see it, now, you know, you're sort of on the inside of this, certainly much more than I am. The importance of seeing this WINTEL on these reports, these telegrams to the NSA from their field offices. The importance of that is that in itself is some bit of disclosure. That in itself admits there are some of these they take seriously. It's not Chinese wedding candles. It's not balloons. It's not something else. This one is real. And so that's some disclosure there. But I think this whole thing about the messages is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Did you get a chance to look at, as Dr. Campaign goes through his process of explaining how to develop the key to decode these messages, you get to a point where part of it you can read. It's an equation with numbers and symbols that we're familiar with. Did you get to that part? Did you take a look at that? And could you understand any of that?
Yeah, I could understand. I could understand some of it. I mean, I didn't study it in depth. I mean, a lot of this is standard procedure, how they build on trying to find cryptographic keys, and you know, just a kind of a start with a best guess, develop a process. When they find something that has a pattern to it, they continue on. But and it may be that the reason that they kept this covered up was this is kind of telling. It doesn't apply anymore because there's much more advanced algorithms that they use. But, you know, at the time, this may have been very telling as to the process that they used to develop, you know, to decrypt things like this. That may have been part of the secret to this whole thing that they didn't want to release.
Well, that makes sense.
Not that the average citizen would have gotten it, but, you know, if it's made available to us, then other intelligence sources around the world might have gotten a hold of it.
Sure.
It may have given away some of our secrets.
But that makes sense, in going through the process, while he's going through the process of explaining the development of the key, he's using a real message, real messages out of that batch of 29 messages. So he's using, you know, one of the real messages, and it comes down to an equation, which I assume would make sense perhaps to a physicist or an engineer. It made no sense to me. But an interesting thing about that, though, he talks about there, you know, we've decoded some words, and there are some words we haven't decoded, and he gives you an example of one, and he says, you know, this is a connective word, but we really don't know what that means. And so what's interesting about that to me is he's talking about words. So it's not just math. Also, he says that part of the decoding of a message, one of the messages, it turned out to be our periodic table with all the elements of the periodic table.
Yeah, and in specific, I think the reference was to the last group of messages dealt specifically with rare earth types of elements.
Yeah. So, folks, when you read this article, and like I said, I've put the link in our forums in the members area. And remember, although it's posted right there on the page, the member-only page, that you have to register when you go for the first time to the forums. You have to register in forums. People don't read that, and then they send me email and tell me they can't get in the forums. They're blocked. You're not blocked. Register. But anyway, it's right there in the forums. You click on the link. You read the article. You're not going to see a message that says, "Hi, Earth, this is us. We're coming to eat you." It's not that kind of message. The messages are primarily mathematical. The messages are primarily mathematical. And this, of course, is the forte of Dr. Campaign. That's what his PhD is in. It's in mathematics. So where do you think this goes? I mean, we're reading from their own publication that first was published for the NSA by the NSA. Now it's on the Internet. We're reading from it that, you know, they've gotten these messages. We're reading from it that these messages, the extraterrestrials were very pleased that they had been able to decode and understand a particular concept of mathematics, and at such an early stage in the contact. And basically they said, if you've been amazed so far, the fact that you've been able to decode that means you can decode some other stuff, and what we're about to send you is going to blow you away. Is that a pretty good characterization of what you read?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, and that was in 1966 that was published. That means the event took place prior to that. We don't know how far back prior to that. But certainly since 1966, they must have gotten some of those messages that have pretty much rolled their socks down, wouldn't you think?
Mm-hmm.
What do you suspect those have to do with? What do you suspect they might be talking about?
Everything that I could gather about this would lead me to believe that they were talking about eventual release of possibly advanced mathematics, higher level science, technological breakthroughs. Mostly, what struck me is more of a physics aspect that, you know, we're to a certain level at this point that we couldn't even comprehend where this could lead to in the complexity of the technology as far as the advancements and what is actually capable. Now, realize, too, back in 1966, 69, you know, we 69, we just sent people up to the moon. We thought that was a big deal. We had some very antiquated stuff based on today's standards. You know, looking back at that whole thing, the mere fact that we got anybody off the ground was a miracle. But, you know, the other thing that's very striking is since this point in time, I mean, we've well surpassed exponential development in our technology.
Do you think that the exponential growth in our technology has been a result of these further messages giving us more information?
I think it's quite possible. I think that there, you know, if messages were actually received, they were decoded. You know, we seem to be stopped at number 31, and they're talking about the possibility of receiving number 200, number 2000. You know, it sounded like they planned on receiving more messages, and I don't remember which one it is, but one of these articles has said, remember, they called us.
Yeah.
They initiated this transmission. And obviously something having to do with that we were able to apply our knowledge up to this point to decrypt it and figure this out step by step. And, you know, what could be given to us eventually would be huge. I mean, we couldn't imagine the enormity of this. And interestingly enough, you know, right after that, what became the big popular topic of the day? Quantum physics.
Yeah.
Which by all terms has opened the door to, I call quantum physics our fudge factor. If there's something that you can see phenomenologically, or you can actually touch it, sense it, see something happening, but you can't explain it scientifically, mm-hmm. You throw it in the quantum basket. It's got to be a quantum event. Which opens the door to things like guests you've had on your show, like Michio Kaku talking about hyperdimensional space and things like that. This has opened a huge door to the possibilities that we have an endless amount of scientific exploration to discover. And it's totally possible that we have been receiving these signals, and a lot of our advancements in technology have been directly as a result of this. Because we really took off technologically right very shortly after these papers were published.
Yeah, and let's qualify. When you say after these papers were published, we don't mean that they were published to the public. They were published by the NSA for the NSA.
And if these signals exist, how long did it take them without having the supercomputers of modern day and everything else? These people had to hand do a lot of this. I mean, they had glorified answering machines, and, you know, obviously, if you look through this, they're applying Boolean operators to this and binary numbering systems and things of that nature. So they were already relating it to computer-based technology. So, I mean, the tremendous amount of workload that it would take with what was available with the NSA's computers at the time, the staff, the resources, how long did they have this? If these are real signals, how long did it take them to actually get to the point where they could publish this? It could have been years.
Well, they, when I say they, I mean various parts of the government, had real computers long before we thought they existed. What was it, 19?
I was just comparing them to today's standards. I mean,
yeah.
What we've got available now.
But scientists in 1969 were still, you know, scientists, physicists, engineers were still using slide rules. Because, you know, the first real heavy-duty calculators, scientific calculators, came out in, what, the early 70s, right?
Yeah, I remember when my dad was proud as punch bringing his first one home. It cost him almost $1,000.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the first home computers came out in what, 1980, 82, something like that? So, you know, and now people just take it for granted. They think, well, you know, those have been around forever. Oh, no, they have not. And by the way, folks, if you ever get a chance to go to the Johnson Space Center down in Houston, you ought to go and take the tour. You will see a Gemini capsule. That's, well, you'll actually, I think you can see a Mercury. Yeah, there's a Mercury capsule there that actually has gone into space with an astronaut inside it. And it looks like, you know, it's like riding a beer can into space. And the computer that ran that is in the Smithsonian, and that ran the Mercury program. And that computer has about as much computing power as a digital watch, but it fills a room. So, you know, this is what we're talking about with scientific development. Things have really, really developed significantly since about 1970, 1971, and it just took off. And certainly the timing, Jeff, the timing of this certainly matches up with the reception of the messages.
Oh, absolutely. And it also seems to line up with both the Russian and U.S.-based programs, and the fact that we're actually going out into space and, you know, not just sending a few probes out, sending out actual manned missions into space, you know, just beyond Earth's orbit.
Mm-hmm. There is a new report that is out now from Luca Scottamburlo out of Italy. He's been on my show. And he says, look, folks, I don't know if this is real or not, but this information has come to me. I've been able to identify the person's name and a few other things about the person. But this is a person who sent him information that there was a secret mission to Mars, a manned mission, and he provided a photograph that he said is Buzz Aldrin on Mars. Now, I don't know if that's true. I mean, it is true that Luca Scottamburlo published that. It's at UFO Digest. Go look it up. That's true. He published it. But even he says he doesn't know if the story is true. But this would put us, if it were true, it would put us on Mars with a manned mission that sent someone there and brought that person back in the 70s. Do you think that was even possible if we were getting these messages and maybe knew how to do that? What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I'll tell you, the more of these documents that start coming out, the more that there's leaked information, more people, the gentleman that, true or not, that headed up Lockheed Martin Skunk Works and everything, is deathbed confessional and things, they're all pointing to we've had more technology than we really know, and we've had it for a long time. Now, having been involved with certain things in the government, which I won't go into, and coming from a background of a family that was involved with a lot of high technological things, I know for a fact that some of the things that we knew about, or were, you know, some of the things that we have just as consumers and the general citizenry and public of the United States that have just been made aware of was developed and operational in the early 70s. We think it's all new technology. So the fact that if any of this stuff was coming in and there were any of this information's credible and we're decoding signals, we could be so far advanced and not even know it at this point in our technology. We could have, based on this stuff, we could have certainly mastered faster than light travel at this point. I would assume that if somebody was sending us messages and they specifically mentioned they called us, then I would assume, since they're giving us this information and they're giving us pieces to build upon, that at some point in time, you know, they probably give us the information about how to meet up with them at some point in time.
Well, you know, there are rumors all over the internet, and have been for years, about the fact that the United States, the rumor says the United States has a secret space program, and that they have vehicles that you don't have to have a rocket. You take off, just lift off, take off, anti-gravity, and can go out into space, and they can come back and land, and there's no such thing as, you know, all that heat shield and everything. Everything's cool, everything's fine. What do you think? Is that possible?
Oh, I'm sure it is. Absolutely sure that it is.
Okay. We have a break coming up here in about a minute. And what I want to do when we come back from this break is I want to dive back into these signals again. I want to dive back into these messages again. And because I don't think, you know, we have talked about the one article, but I don't think we've really plumbed the depths on these extraterrestrial messages yet. And apparently, based on what's been published by the NSA and now has been made public on their website, apparently there have been real extraterrestrial messages that have been received. There has been some response from the extraterrestrials, noting that we solved some of it. And that means that they have some way to communicate with us that's faster than light. Because if they're 24 light years away and they're using plain old radio, it takes 24 years to send the message, 24 to get a reply. That's a 48-year round trip. That ain't happening. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Jeff Bird. And Jeff, when we went away for break, I said I want to kind of drill down into this and think about this a little bit. These messages, which the documents published by the NSA said we received these messages. Okay. They can't be coming in on standard radio because radio travels at the speed of light. A radio signal travels at the speed of light. So if an ET is sitting very, very close to us, we'll say 24 light years away, and he does a transmission, it takes 24 years for that transmission to hit Earth. And then everybody on Earth is all excited about it, and they decode the transmission, and they send an answer. It takes 24 years for that answer to get back to the alien. So in between transmissions, you've got a 48-year lag. the way this is written, you remember the part you read to us about they were particularly pleased that we had decoded this particular concept? That implies, actually it doesn't imply, it requires that there's some kind of two-way communication that isn't at the speed of light, but much faster. Would you agree?
Yeah, and looking through some of these things, one of the specific things that they were looking at is actually when they intentionally started looking at the signals, they were looking at the background hydrogen radiation, assuming that, you know, since the hydrogen is, vibrates in space and everything else, that it would be the most prominent thing that somebody would launch something on like this. So, I mean, they were thinking very smart way back then. But, you know, it wasn't too long after all of this was originally pushed that we started developing concepts of things like tachyons, scalar. I mean, scalar things seem to be, you know, talked about all the time all of a sudden. They're not new concepts. I mean, they've been around. They were considered to be mathematical fudge factors a long time ago. But we started talking about faster than light phenomena and theorizing and doing experiments and actually theorizing certain quantum events that could provide almost instantaneous transmissions of information. And I believe you had a guest on not too long ago that was talking about these the scalar transmissions and subspace things where they could transmit these things over great distances and almost immediately.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, part of this would be, say that they were trying to contact us. They knew the level of advancement that we could decode these things. And started sending out a series of messages prior to all this that we started decoding, and maybe in all of this information, it gave us the key to being able to communicate with them in real time instead of this round trip thing taking 48 years.
Well, and especially, you mentioned that right after the news about these messages was presented to the NSA and published by the NSA. Right after that is when all of this quantum theory and quantum mechanics and quantum physics sort of just broke out into the open. Part of that has to do with something called quantum entanglement. Every particle is entangled with another particle, and according to that theory, and whatever happens to one, there's an immediate change in the other one. And they can be all the way across the universe from each other, and yet they are somehow spookily entangled. And in fact, that is what, that's the way that Einstein referred to it. Spooky action at a distance. All right.
Yeah,
so why couldn't you use that as a means of communication?
Well, you definitely could. And, you know, I was going to mention that one of the bases for quantum computing and why the possibility of quantum computing is so phenomenal is that based on entangled pairs of like photons and things like that, they're able to predict, and I've actually watched it in a university in Boston where they were working on this early on at a NASA conference, that they were able to predict the computer making mistakes before it ever did. So if you can look ahead into the future and predict a mistake that's getting ready to happen in the future, you can certainly come up with some way to have faster than light communications.
So in 1966, we have this report to the NSA of messages having been received, and this report talks about a response that the extraterrestrials had to the fact that we had been able to decode a particular mathematical concept so early in the process, and they were pleased with this. Now, that implies that there is some type of real-time or very near real-time communication happening. Now, even here's why. Even if the ETs had sent those messages, we'll say, 100 years ago, knowing that they would arrive at a particular time when we would probably be able to receive them and decode them. Okay, so we received them and decoded them. But they knew in real time that that had happened. You follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They knew in real time, or very near real time, that this particular concept had been decoded and understood. So there had to be some kind of communications that were near the speed of quantum entanglement. There had to be some kind of communication like that, which means then that your theory that the first thing they sent to us was how to have those kinds of communications. Those
perhaps,
kinds of communications
perhaps
also could be used
on our back doorstep too.
Do what?
Perhaps they could have driven up on our back doorstep.
Well, that's possible. They could be parked in space right out the back door here. That's possible. All right, now, another aspect of that quantum entanglement, not only could it be used for instantaneous communications, that's sort of what's behind this whole thing about teleportation, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, based on all the information from the Defense Technical Information Center, yeah, the whole idea of the teleportation has to do with faster-than-light type things.
Okay, so if we've got...
We also know now that we don't have to go faster than the speed of light because we've proven some of the theories, hyperspatial theories like Michio Kaku has come out with, where they've been able to take a photon and remove it from our dimensional reality, blip it out in hyperspace, and have it come in.
Yeah.
Someplace else in space and time, which means that there may be a whole other dimension that you can send signals out to and have them come back in real time or close to real time, but you really don't have to propagate them. There's also theories that exist that every point in space and time are interconnected. This was the basis for the disclosure based on Lockheed Skunk Works as to how we could have fast-than-light travel. So there's a whole bunch of possibilities. But we do know that we have observed in a lab that we can move things, we can move light particles faster than light.
Okay, so faster than light's, that barrier's been broken.
So we know that's possible.
All right. You are a descendant of one of the most famous explorers and one of the greatest heroes in American history, Admiral Byrd.
Very far removed, yeah. But
yeah.
got some of the genetics somewhere.
What do you think he would say if he could pop back into 2011, take a look around, take a look at all these documents that we're talking about? What do you think he would say about all this?
He probably would finally understand some of the communication that he purportedly had himself with some of these extraterrestrials based on certain reports.
You think those reports are reliable?
Some of them may be non-reliable. There's enough credible evidence that, at least in my opinion, having had some of the closer family members that actually worked in the Pentagon and had access to some of these pieces of data, some of the pictures I've seen that are pretty darn reliable. How deep that rabbit hole goes, I really don't know. It's kind of interesting, but they're saying he didn't seem to think it was anything out of the ordinary.
Okay. So we've had communications, apparently, according to these documents, if we're reading them right, we've had communications with extraterrestrials now since at least the 1960s. Now, here's something that kind of goes with your sort of sub-theory that maybe they started sending out these communications a long time ago and knowing that sooner or later somebody's going to pick them up, sooner or later somebody's going to decode them and understand how to build a communication device to communicate with them in real time. Maybe back then in 1924, maybe that was some of the first signals coming in.
It's totally possible.
People knew they were getting signals, but they really didn't know anything else about what to do with those signals. A few years go by, some more signals are picked up, specifically, off of the Sputnik. Something was interfering with its transmission in an intelligent way.
And we were convinced that they were little green men on Mars doing it at that time.
Well, what do you think about the possibility that I've heard this, that perhaps some of these extraterrestrials are not sitting light years away, but may actually be in underground bases on Mars or on the moon? Is that within the realm of feasibility here?
Yeah, and if certain reports are correct, and based on some of the information on the Hollow Earth theory and Admiral Byrd's disclosures, if they're correct, they live in underground bases at the poles.
So maybe they're not coming from all that far away. We'll be back right after this break. To the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach here, folks. We're talking with Jeff Byrd, and at the beginning of the show, if you didn't catch the beginning of the show, you didn't hear about his particular qualifications to be talking about NSA documents, but he's qualified, and you'll need to listen to the archive or watch the latest show, and then you'll hear it and you'll understand. Now, Jeff, there are people doing everything they can to say somehow, some way, this stuff's not real. I'm not trying to sell the idea that it's real. That's not my agenda. I'm not trying to sell the idea that for sure we have had communications with extraterrestrials. What I'm doing is I'm looking at the evidence as put on the table by the NSA. And I'm saying, here's what their evidence says. I want to ask you, again, when you look at this, Do you think this is hypothetical? Do you think this is all an exercise? Or do you think this is all genuine, just as it's stated in the NSA documents?
I think the exercise part of it was developing the keys to decode all of this. Like I said before, there are no disclaimers. This is pretty much matter of fact. They're not prefacing this with a hypothetical situation. Generally, when you're dealing with documents of this caliber, you know, if it was a hypothetical situation, they would be, you know, this is based on this arbitrary thing or this. This is pretty matter of fact. It's written in form that this is what we've got, this is what we're doing, and there's nothing in here that says anything to say that it does mention the word exercise, but it doesn't say anything that this is particularly some made up scenario, and we're trying to see, well, if we ever get signals, how are we going to deal with them?
Right. When he uses the word exercise.
And other previous documents say that we aren't alone in the universe. It's generally accepted by the scientific community that's in the know. We have received other signals in the past. So obviously, back in 1958, they took this very seriously. And, you know, you hit 66, 69 when these things came out. They're obviously looking for ways to decode something. Whether this is actually, I would hazard to guess that if they really receive these signals, what we're seeing is maybe not exactly what those signals were, because I doubt very seriously they would publish these in a technical journal that somebody could walk out with, because in the late 60s, people could walk out with documents. They didn't have cameras all over the place. They didn't have the security that they have now. But there is nothing to say anywhere. I mean, they just jump right in. Here, we receive signals from outer space. Here they are. Here's the exercise we use to develop a decryption key. And in another area, what are we going to receive? What kind of information are we going to receive by the 200th or 2000th signal? If it's a hypothetical situation, they came up with a huge story surrounding this to make it seem like it was real.
Well, another thing that argues against it being all a hypothetical and all an exercise is it's spread out over a number of years. I don't know of the military doing an exercise that lasts for years. You know, it's got a start date, it's got an end date, and during that period of time, there are certain things that they're going to test and certain things they're going to evaluate and so forth. It has a start date and an end date. We don't have a start date, we don't have an end date, and it's spread out over a period of years in the record that has been published now on the internet. This is spread out over a period of years. So, to me, it looks like the real deal. It looks like they have received messages from outer space. They have decoded them. The exercise that he refers to is the exercise involved in showing the NSA. This was a presentation to the NSA, showing them how they developed the key for decoding. That's what this appears to me to be. One of the biggest enemies that we have, though, in my opinion, is this little function of the human psyche that thinks that somehow we humans have a need to believe. Oh, I believe that. Oh, I don't believe that. I think that's sort of an evolutionary dysfunction. I mean, whatever is just is, whether you believe it or don't believe it. And whatever isn't just isn't, no matter how much you believe it. And so, you know, I don't think that this is something where people need to say, well, I believe that or I don't believe that. But here's what we can say for sure, folks. We can say for sure there's no question about the authenticity of these documents. None. These were published by the NSA in their journal. They stonewalled everybody to keep from getting these out. When they finally had to release them, they released them onto the internet on their website. There's no question about the authenticity of these documents. None. Zero. Zip. Nada. Nema nishta. These documents are real. You have to do a little bit of research into a great many documents because one document references another one. Well, you got to go find that one. And not all the documents that are referenced show up on that website. But when you do and you put it all together, it looks to me like we just got disclosure. I think so. Again, I could be wrong, but that's what it looks like to me at this point. At this point.
And if it is all based on supposition and a cryptologic exercise and what if we receive signals, they had a very vast, they had a vast amount of assumptions that they had to make that they didn't clearly make as assumptions. Like, we would expect these signals to come in this way. The mathematics would be arranged this direction. We would expect all these things. They didn't say that. They said, this is how they came in.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we put it all together. Now, I have my doubts as to whether this is the actual information that may have been received, but I don't think that there's much doubt that they have received something. They've been decoding it. They're showing an exercise and the basis of how they developed the key to decode this based on a vast amount of knowledge that would be based on pure dumb luck guesses. I don't think that's the case. There's too much knowledge and too much information. Obviously, a lot of resources went into developing.
Well, I wish we had more time, but we don't, folks. That's it. That's a wrap. I told you to be here, and you would be glad you're here, and I was right, wasn't I? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.